Welcome to NetSmart Care Threads, a podcast where human services and post-acute leaders across the healthcare continuum come together to discuss industry trends, challenges, and opportunities. Listen as we uncover real stories about how to innovate and improve the quality of care for the communities we serve. Let's get into the show.
Hi there, my name is Lindsay Mack, and I am your host for today. I am the Director of Client Success for EVV at NetSmart. I worked for a managed care organization and implemented EVV with data aggregation for that payer to a diverse market when EVV was very fresh and new following 21st Century Cures Act. I'm excited to have my friend Christy Piles back on another NetSmart podcast. Christy has an impressive background in healthcare consulting and EVV. Christy, for those who have not listened to your previous conversation, why don't you share a bit more about yourself before we get started?
Sure. Thanks, Lindsay. So I partnered with NetSmart about maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Prior to that, I worked an extensive career in law enforcement and compliance, which included Medicaid fraud control units, et cetera. So got the great opportunity to partner with NetSmart a few years ago, and it's been an exciting partnership where we have implemented state implementations, we've done CMS certifications, but in addition, I'm also the founder of In Your Corner Consulting. So with that role, I do work with providers across the country and with payers and their vendors so that they can get implemented with their EVV program, both operationally and with compliance, et cetera. So it's been a very exciting journey since 2016. When the Cures Act first became a thing.
Excellent. Thanks, Christy. I know you're a wealth of knowledge, so I'm excited to get into this today. So for today, we are going to give a windshield landscape horizon view of all things EVV. We're going to review what we've seen in the EVV space since the 21st Century Cures Act, what has worked, what hasn't worked, what could possibly be coming in the future based on market trends and the ever-changing needs of the Medicaid population. So, Christy, to kick us off, as of today, what is the overall status of personal care implementations in the United States?
Personal care has had a nice little journey since it started. I believe Illinois may have been the first state to get that out and rolling around 2014-ish. But here we are in this day and age, and we have still a state or two that's working on trying to get their personal care implemented. But by and large, the majority of the states have had personal care implemented and are currently working on trying to troubleshoot and get their providers more comfortable with the process.
Absolutely. Provider comfort is a huge pain point for, I know, a lot of these folks. And I know we'll get into that more in the later conversations. And I know currently for PCS, we're working on more structure and standardization and all of that with the data that we're getting for EVV, which brings me to the home health. So a lot of folks may or may not know PCS, personal care services and home health were parsed out a bit with the 21st Century Cures Act, and then we're given different mandate dates. So Christy, from your perspective, where are we with the home health implementations?
So home health is a bit more challenging. You know, with personal care, there was more structure and a little bit of standardization just because that was kind of already built into the programs. But with home health, we have nurses, clinicians going into homes. So it's presented a bit of a barrier to payers to try to get it implemented in a holistic way. We do have the majority of states with their home health implemented, with a few still working on it. But I would say the majority of states have been implemented, with the exception of a few trouble areas here and there.
Absolutely. So what we've heard a lot in my role with implementing the technology, there's quite a few pain points that providers and payers have both experienced or are currently experiencing with the implementations. One of those being technology barriers, rural service locations, device availability, user comfort with technology. A lot of these, some states have gotten creative with addressing those needs. Christy, can you speak to that a bit?
Sure. So yeah, with the home health implementation, with, you know, sprinkled in personal care, you have technology needs for the clinicians or the end users that may vary based on the stakeholder group. So they've had contracted therapists. They've had to try to accommodate that. So for those states who have therapies in their EVV programs, provider agencies who are contracted with the state may also contract with a therapist company to come in. So states have had to try to overcome that challenge and how to get them mandated into using that EVV system as well, and making that EVV system accommodate that relationship. You know, we've got the rural service locations, as you mentioned. You know, a lot of states I've heard come out and say, well, let's use landline for your telephony. But if you look at the census, not that many people have landline in their homes anymore. So that makes that telephony a bit more challenging. where I think it's been really nice to see the mobile apps come out with the offline usage. That's helped a lot in this area. But, you know, you still have those small sections of population who there's just no service and there's no capabilities. So that's been an obstacle. And, you know, device availability, we already have agencies working, sometimes barely meeting the where they're making any revenue. We have caregivers who have flip phones, or they, you know, we have a seasoned citizen population who they don't invest in technology. So that creates a bit of a barrier as well. But, you know, one of the things that when I worked as a state agency implementing EVV, we recognized that we had that seasoned citizen population who wasn't comfortable with the new technology coming about. So we decided as a state agency to work with a provider association and host in-person training sessions that, you know, we had our trainers go out and work with this population. And we had a lot of, I'm going to say disgruntled, because that's exactly what they were. They were, you know, these seasoned citizens who are caring for whether it be their own child or their grandchild, whatever the dynamic may have been. They came in very disgruntled. They didn't feel like it worked. But we worked with them, and after they got the training hands-on and saw that it's really not as complicated as it may seem, they left feeling pretty happy with it. So I do think that, you know, as a payer, you have to recognize that you have different sections of the population who just are still not technologically advanced for this type of thing.
Absolutely. Yes, that's been a major lessons learned from a lot of the implementations that we've done so far, is to have your state and your payer and your folks that are mandating these changes truly take note and listen to your stakeholder groups, not just what you think is going to work, but listen to the folks who are actually utilizing the technology, the people who are affected by the technology, listen to what they have to say and see if there's a middle ground that you can come to, and still ensure compliance and make sure that all of those boxes are checked as well. Chrissy, you had mentioned earlier about the financial concerns. Can you elaborate on that a bit more?
Absolutely. So working with providers, and first let me back up a minute, as a Medicaid payer implementing this program, we think we know what we know based on the policy and rules that we have in place. But now being on the other side of it, working with providers, I'm seeing a lot of the administrative burden that providers were really shouting about when we first started implementing EVV back years ago. So EVV, depending on the way the state chooses to implement it or the payer, it can create a significant administrative burden to providers, especially when you have states or payers who may have four or five different EVV aggregators in the state. You know, the state has their own, MCOs are allowed to choose their own. Now, providers who are using third-party vendors have to pay to integrate with each of these different vendors that these payers are using. So there's no real front door. And on top of that, when you don't have an aggregator for the state or payer that submits the claims on the provider's behalf, now you have that troubleshooting, and there's a gap between what claim is getting submitted and what the EVV visit looks like and whether it's going to be compliant at the end. So now they have to expend resources to make sure that these visits are compliant. So on top of that, just recently, we now have this 80-20 rule coming out from CMS. And where it may seem like a great idea to make sure our caregivers are getting the payment that they need, and I don't disagree with that, we have a significant caregiver issue in this country. But we also have providers who are already at the top of their administrative budget, just trying to stay compliant. EVV is not the only thing they're trying to work with compliance on. There's also the copy programs and everything else that the feds and the states are throwing at them. So it's a whack-a-mole for them. So to take away that extra administrative cushion to try to hire people to keep them compliant and implemented on time, it may push some agencies out of business. So I think that's something that payers have to be aware of as well.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. And on that same note, and I know we'll get to it a little bit later in the podcast as well, but I think on the flip side, we can look to utilizing the EVV technology as a way to assist with some of those workforce shortages that we have here and some of those reimbursement issues and those budgeting issues. A lot of the EVV technologies, especially what we offer here at NetSmart, offer some additional workforce management tools within. So a recommendation out there for anyone looking to select a vendor, take a peek at what your vendor has to offer to make sure that you are getting paid appropriately for the services that your caregivers are rendering. And then that can in turn assist with your overall budgeting.
Lindsay, that was a mouthful right there. If they're going to choose a vendor, they have to look at the operational offerings. It's not just the technology and getting it implemented. what do they offer on the back end to help your operations? That is a huge deal, and I'm glad you mentioned that.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. So moving through, I think now we're going to move on to talking more about the landscape. Like, what is coming short term for EVV?
So that varies by state and payer. What I've seen happening more and more as the years have progressed with personal care is that they're denying claims for EVV. So that's something that providers have to stay engaged with the state, because you have those states that aren't denying EVV today, but they are going to. Some will give you 60 days notice. Some will give you 90 days notice. But for those providers using an alternate EVV system, your vendors are working in multiple different states, and there may be a roadmap for releases to help with compliance. So I think, you know, one of the things coming up in the short term is that providers really need to be checking their EVV visits to make sure they're compliant so that they can get their vendors corrected if there's an issue. Because once those claim denials start, it may be too late and there's going to be revenue impact. You know, one of the other things I'm seeing is we have, if it's not a claims denial, it may be a reduction in reimbursement. Some of them go monthly, some may go quarterly, but it's something that providers have to be aware of. And I think one of the bigger things that providers are really, really starting to be concerned about is this manual entry or edit. And it's something that CMS has put in place where states have to report their key performance indicators and how many times an EVV visit may or may not be touched. So it's being driven from what states have to report to CMS, but CMS hasn't set those standards yet. States are. So there are some states who are setting this manual entry or edit compliance threshold at 80%, some at 90%, some may be looking at 100%. But I think what we have to understand is that, you know, CMS has said there has to be a second method of verification. And as we discussed, landline may not always be an option. So we have to include manual entry or edit. That's just a fact of life for EVV. So I think that's something that's coming in the very short term, is that providers have to worry about, in addition to claims denials or compliance with claims, also the manual entry and edit compliance.
Absolutely, for sure. Can you speak a little bit to maybe some state program changes that come about and how that's going to affect the EVV landscape here?
Absolutely. So as some of us may or may not know, states, the majority of the time, go through an RFP process or request for proposal. And it's a contract. And like most of us have ever signed a contract, there's an expiration date. So there are a lot of states, if not the majority of them, that have to go back through the re-procurement process. And that vendor that's existing today that providers have come accustomed to, they may not win that contract. So providers have to be aware that there may be vendor changes as states go through their EVV process. And that's just by law. States have to go through a process and there's contract expiration. There's nothing really that they can do about that. But one of the other things they have to be aware of, and I'll use Ohio as an example, their vendor won the re-procurement, but as part of that re-procurement, the state recognized that there may have been some gaps in technology that they wanted, you know, those bells and whistles that you don't always ask for. And because of a change in what they've asked for in the contract, now there's going to be program changes. So Ohio has some pretty significant program changes where if providers aren't staying engaged with the state, they're not going to know about, and it's going to significantly impact their compliance starting July 1st. So, and that those changes can be asking, and it not can be, but it is, you have to get a recipient's permission annually to record GPS for your visits. That's an operational impact, and it has to be done prior to 7/1. But not only operationally impact, it's also impacting the vendors, because now vendors who are taking care of the check-in and check-out GPS collection at the caregiver level, now they have to move it to the recipient level. And that can be a huge undertaking. So that's just one of the bigger things that's happening. But, you know, they're removing things from the program, they're adding things, and they're changing the technical specifications. But that's just an example of how a state can change a program sometimes significantly. And it can happen anytime, depending on the state's program.
Absolutely. And we do see it quite often. But I mean, again, on the flip side of that, speaking of bells and whistles, on a positive note, we are what I would call we're in the golden age of EVV right now. So we are, most of the vendors, especially those of us who are in state aggregation, payer aggregation, are beyond the bare minimum 6 data point collection foundational form of EVV. And we're having the ability with these program changes and the market need to be able to adjust and enhance our solutions to give a better end user experience. The focus for the larger vendors right now is improving the current technologies and the workflows to accommodate some of these edge cases or program shifts that we're seeing, like your Ohio example, to be able to accommodate those folks. Self-directed has definitely come out in full force in the last couple of years, stating that, hey, the current agency workflow of EVV is really not functional for us self-directed folks. So we're able to take our technologies that were built basically with the very foundational understanding of check-in, check-out, six data points, and really grow them and enhance them in a way that your end users are having a better experience. And I'll go back to the workforce management piece. The more we learn, the more that we are active in this EVV space, the better we're able to build our tool to accommodate these needs to help combat that the workforce shortage that we have as a nationwide problem. Christy, what do you think is coming in the near future for any SDOH or, you know, anything that we can do with the EVV tool that might not have been historically the purpose?
So I think EVV, as frustrated as providers may be that it had to be done, it gives us insight into the home that we didn't have before. So I think payers and providers are able to take the EVV data and determine healthier path forward for some of the recipients. You know, for example, if I have a caregiver, whether it be a nurse or a personal care aide, but they're assigned to people and every single one of their people have higher hospitalization rates than my other caregivers, maybe I have a training issue or an issue with that caregiver. Conversely, we also know that there are dangers to caregivers in the home. If we have a high turnover rate for one particular recipient, we may want to look at what's going on in that home that's driving the overturn of that workforce. And EVV is a great tool to capture that because you get to see them, how long were they in the home, for what services, what's their diagnosis. It gives you a level of information in one spot that you can really help drive your operations.
Absolutely. And then to your point, I mean, value-based care is a huge buzzword in the market right now. Having that additional data set and the ability to analyze the data at that level now with what we're getting with EVV is assisting payers with shifting the mindset from monitoring providers that may be underperforming to potentially rewarding providers that are experiencing better patient outcomes due to the care that they're delivering. So there's always, you know, always that positive, that silver lining that you can pull out of this additional data that we're receiving. So Christy, let's go ahead and move on to the horizon. Where do we see EVV programs headed in the next, say, 3 to 5 years?
Well, we know that CMS at any time, given stakeholder feedback and experience, that they can update their FAQs, which, if for those that don't know, the rule around EVV lies in the CMS FAQs. So if they go in and say this service no longer has to be an EVV, or maybe this service does have to be an EVV, then we could see program changes to include or remove. For example, across the country right now, you have states that require PDN in EVV and some that don't, and some that allow it to be optional because it helps alleviate some provider concern. So I think we could see program changes based on CMS guidance, or you've got states who may start new waivers to assist with some of the care that the recipients need. That may remove a section of people from EVV, or it may add to. So as states grow, we know that Medicaid ebbs and flows. So as states grow their programs, it could affect change within EVV. And then we also have to think about what other services could EVV bleed into. So we know that CMS has said at minimum, this is what states have to do to be EVV compliant. And CMS has very vocally said that states can go above and beyond the 21st Century Cures Act mandate where it comes to EVV. So we could see transportation get included. We know that there is a pretty good baseline of fraud, waste, and abuse when it comes to transportation, depending on which area they're in. So EVV could get adopted over there. You know, hospice, depending on how they're billed. Some states have hospice in their programs, some don't. So depending on how that palliative care community grows, we could see EVV changes with that. We also, one thing that also is very much a concern to me is, you know, early on when I was adopting EVV as a payer, I heard through the pretty credible rumor mill that CMS was considering a Medicare pilot for EVV. And I don't know where that's gone. I've heard it throughout the years, but that could certainly be interesting, but also devastating if not done correctly. So that's something that, you know, I think we should keep a lookout for.
Absolutely. Thank you, Christy. The other thing that I think in the next 3 to 5 years, I think we're going to probably see some shifts to program standardization on a national level. So right now, CMS has given states a lot of freedom to kind of interpret those FAQs, like you had mentioned before, and set their own standards for different things. I definitely foresee a standardization coming in the near future to make sure that the data that we're tracking on the East Coast and the West Coast can all be tracked and trended together and ultimately analyzed to improve outcomes for the Medicaid members. The other thing in the next 3 to 5 years, I figure we're going to start taking a much deeper dive into those lessons learned and best practices that we've seen from the states that have been successful, and taking those and making actual improvements to the technology based on the real world usage and feedback that we've gotten so far. I'm curious, Christy, talking about the technology side, AI comes up quite a bit in all these conferences that we go to and all of these conversations that we're having. Do you foresee AI becoming a larger piece of EVV in the future?
I could certainly see the possibility. I think, especially with providers who have, you know, thousands of visits a week, you know, there's a lot of data to pour through. And I'm guilty of it. I have used the Gemini, the Google GPT version to come up with great statements and things. But, you know, I think if you take something as powerful as something like AI and you can input your data into that to give you an output of these people may be better suited for these types of services, or giving you a trending, some types of analysis, I think that AI could very, very easily be adopted in EVV, you know, and it could even be at the mobile application level where it may be more interactive. You know, some payers want surveys at the beginning of visits or at the end. So AI could be used to do a determination of those surveys and analysis. So yeah, I could certainly see AI rolling into it.
Excellent. Thank you for that. So to bring us in for a landing, the possibilities are abundant for EVV. We've got a lot of growth, a lot of change. The only thing that you can, you know, hang your hat on is the fact that things will change. But EVV is proving to be a game-changing tool for care delivered outside of a traditional facility environment. Christy, thank you so much for sharing your insights today. Where can the audience tap into more of your thought leadership advice?
Sure. So thanks for having me. It's been fun as always. I love having these conversations with you, Lindsay. So if someone wants to find out more about my thoughts on this topic, you can visit my website. I have blogs that I issue at least a couple times a month, and that's IYC-consulting.com.
Perfect. Thanks again, Christy. This was a lot of fun. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating, and we'll continue to produce content you find engaging and informative. That's a wrap. Thank you for joining.
At NetSmart, we understand the challenges facing provider organizations. Our team will help you navigate changing value-based care models with solutions and services that make person-centered care a reality. We'll equip you with technology and services that provide holistic, real-time views of care histories that inform better decision-making and better outcomes. Visit us today at ntst.com. NetSmart, serving you so you can serve others. Thanks for listening to the NetSmart Care Threads podcast. Through collaboration and conversation, we can work together to make healthcare more connected than ever before and better support the communities we serve. To ensure you never miss an episode, please subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. If you use Apple Podcasts, we'd love for you to give us a quick rating for the show. Just tap the number of stars that you think the podcast deserves. Until next time.